Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the IRIS Business Services Limited Q4 FY23 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. S. Swaminathan. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. So we have with us today my colleague Balu, who is CFO of the company. We have Deepta, and we have Thomas. So thank you very much for joining the call. I don't, we made our filings with the Bombay Stock Exchange and the National Stock Exchange. You can actually hold. I'm sorry. So we basically have made the filings with the BSE and NSE, where you can download our filings. We've also issued a press release, which also should have been filed by now with the stock exchanges, that will summarize the essence of our performance. I think on the whole, we are quite happy with what we've achieved in the last one year. We are happy for the increase in revenues. We are happy for the profitability. We are for the improvement in profitability. We're also happy for the financial situation we are in. And before we go any further in terms of providing an overview, Balu will just do that, and then we can take questions after that. We're going to leave as much time as possible to take questions. So to start with, over to you, Balu.
Thank you, Swaminathan. Glad to meet all of you once again after a gap of 6 months. I hope that, you know, some of you at least might have seen the investor presentation that we did upload on the exchange websites at around 4:00. Anyway, I would dwell on the highlights of the financial year FY23. Then, of course, we can have the question and answer session. So let me now quickly run through the highlights of the financial performance for the year ending in March 2023. Like in the previous meetings, I will dwell more on the movement of our annual numbers, because we have mentioned this in the past as well. The quarterly print might not really reflect the business dynamics, the underlying business dynamics. Now coming to the numbers per se, you will see that we moved pretty much in line with our nine-month trend for this 12-month period as well. Over the full year, our top line has moved up by around 21% compared to the corresponding period. Now you should see this in the context of our overall sales growth trend over the past 5-6 years. We have been clocking an average growth of 18%-20%. And except for FY22, when, you know, buffeted by the, you know, COVID pandemic and the poor demand conditions, we could only grow at about 8% in FY22 or FY21. This year, you know, we have come back to our so-called secular growth trend, whatever we have performed at this point up to till now. And, you know, correspondingly, you know, with the increase in growth, our profitability has improved as well because this particular business has a good degree of operating leverage. So you will see, you know, our EBITDA moving up by as much as 38%. Of course, PBT and PAT at much higher levels on a proportionate basis. So going back to the, you know, P&L, while the revenue moved up by 21%, expenses, overall expenses increased outside depreciation interest, moved up by 18% as well, within which employees' costs moved up by around 17%. Now, the employees' cost, you know, we have been, you know, spending a little more than what we were in the initial years. Of course, the tech environment, you know, was a bit tight over the last 2 years. Things are easing now. But we have been investing to make sure that we get the right people. We both get and retain the right people within the company. So that process is on, and that has paid us, you know, a good dividend as well. I just also want to mention that from a 5-6 year time frame, right from the IPO days, our top line CAGR has been at around 18%, while the expense growth has been hovering between 11%-12%. So that we are maintaining this year as well on the whole. Now, let me look at the segmental revenues. You would see that, happily, the collect segment has swung back to the growth zone. we clocked about 15% growth in revenues in the collect segment, where we serve regulators with our regulatory platform license and implementation offering. The create segment, which has been the bulwark of the company, has continued robust performance and has clocked about 23.1% in terms of growth. On the whole, the annual recurring revenues also have moved up by about 17-18%, while the share of recurring revenue is at about 75%, a bit lower than 78% in the previous year. That's because when the collection revenues start going up, there is a bit of one-time implementation revenues also coming in, which at times lowers the proportion of recurring revenues. If I look at the revenues for this year, for FY23 from a geographic perspective, I would say that our Indian revenues this year have dipped compared to the previous year. We are at about 38% this year compared to about 45% the previous year. On the whole, revenues across all geographies have moved up. Maybe India not so much, but other geographies more than in India, more than with respect to the Indian growth. Before I move further ahead, I just also want to mention in the context of the revenue growth, some of you might have noticed in our balance sheet, our receivable levels are little on the higher side for asset mastery 3. I think we're at about 24 odd crores compared to 15 odd crores in the corresponding period. One reason has been that, you know, we did raise a couple of, relatively substantial invoices in the collect segment in the month of March, because we did get a couple of wins and there were, you know, invoices raised against those wins. But bulk of this, money which was, raised through these invoices has come into the company. And now the receivable levels, so the debtor levels are more or less at our normal numbers. So that is another point I thought I'll mention in the context of our results. Now another very important development this year has been, or I would say, the late into the financial year ending. We did win a couple of important orders in the collect segment, due to which our order book has, is much more robust compared to our previous numbers. So I would say that, we are at a point where we need to execute well. And if we can do that, I could say that our revenue growth could enter into a new trajectory as well. So that is a quick summary, and we can of course look at different aspects of the business as we get the questions into the context.
Thank you, Balu. Before we take any questions, there's one interesting little tidbit that you would have actually seen, one little feature you've seen. So how is it that with the 20% growth in revenues, there's a fourfold increase in profits? That's where the magic of products lies. So when you win these two contracts overseas from those central banks and you license those products to them and you book those revenues, so it's the magic of the product revenue where there's no corresponding increase in costs. So you license the product because in all our implementations, the first thing that we do and consistently is to first license the product to them and get the payments for the license and then start implementing the product at the the on-prem implementation of the product begins as far as at the central bank. So whether it be the Bhutan central bank, which is called RMA, or whether it be the central bank in South Africa, which is called SARB, South African Central Bank, I think the licensing of the product and the billing of the revenues against that is what happened in the last quarter, which is what led to the disproportionate increase in profitability compared to revenues. So 20% increase in revenues and a four-fold jump in profitability. And for which we're grateful. And that the reason I'm stressing this is because many of us in the course of IT are used to looking at services companies where often there's a linear relationship between the two, between the expenses and revenues. You have billable resources which you bill out, and that's how revenues actually grow. That's not how this business actually grows. So what it also means is that the increase in the revenues from collect also means that if going forward in the next 1 year at least, if you're looking for quarter on quarter the growth, it will not necessarily be the right way of looking at things. You should look at the year as a whole, because that's how billing actually happens, and billing is based on certain milestones. So while the segment that we have called Create, where we sell carbon, may lend itself more easily to a quarter on quarter comparison, in the case of Collect, it's more an annual comparison that's more appropriate. So keep that in mind going forward. So the best way to compare is to basically say, you know, what happened during the year opposed to next year. It's an important way of looking at the company, and that's how we look at it within the company. I'm going to go silent now and take any questions, because I'm sure there are things that you would have seen which I have not seen, for which you might want a clarification going forward. So, and Deepta's available to take questions. Thomas also available to take questions. So please, by all means, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from the line of Rohit, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for the presentation as well. And it's heartening to see the numbers that the company has published this time around. It'll be great if we can start with the Collect segment. I mean, we're firing after 2-3 years right now, particularly on the Bhutan and the South African deals. Could you share what you can share in the call? I mean, keeping in mind the competitive dynamics as well, on what is the tenure of the implementation of the deal, what is the size of the deal in revenues, and how will the revenues be recognized? That would be great.
Sure. Balu, over to you.
Hi, Rohit. See, individual contract size will be difficult to divulge, but having said that, I would say that the South African Reserve Bank implementation is much larger compared to the Bhutan implementation. Bhutan is typically our normal size, which is about, $1 to $2 million, and that Bhutan implementation, which is a collection platform and analytics for the Reserve Bank of Bhutan, we plan to execute in a year's time. Actually, could extend a little bit if certain requirements don't come in time, but on the whole, I think that is our plan to execute that in about, let's say, 12 to 18 months. The second part, the second win, which is a very substantial win from the South African Reserve Bank, that's a much larger, larger project. And here, we are still in the contracting stage. We have a partner as well, so that is going on. But my current estimate is, this could be a, 3 year to 4 year implementation in entirety. Of course, there are different parts to the billing. And there is a license part where we license out our iPad platform along with our automated data bridge software as well. Then there is the implementation part, customization and implementing for a very specific requirement. This is not completely supervisory data collection. This is a combination of supervisory and operating data collection. So this I would say over the next 3 to 4 years, the revenues should be equally spread out. So, there is a milestone-based revenue approach, but there also, I'm hoping, since the contracting is not complete and the pattern is not fully visible, but I would say that broadly, we could see, it evening out over the next 3-4 years' time. But from a size perspective, the size of this contract would be, I would say a multiple of what is there in Bhutan.
Rohit, part of the reason, we're not being difficult with the numbers, but please appreciate one thing. We have a local partner as well. And while we are working on this implementation here, and I can tell you what an iPad will actually cost and so on and so forth, the divvying up of the work between us and the local partner is still going on right now. And that's taking a bit of time. and which is the reason why it's difficult to come up with a precise estimate as to what the proportion for each of us would be going forward. And there's a local partner who will be responsible for local implementation. So while it would have been easy if we had the local partner not doing very much, here the local partner will actually be performing a substantial role in the whole implementation part. And that's the reason why it becomes difficult to come up with a very precise estimate. And but yes, we will, as I said, I think hopefully by the next quarter, by once it's signed, we will have a very good idea as to what the total share will be. Because what I certainly don't want to do is to give you a number which I have to recant a quarter later because the contract did not go in a certain way. The implementation has started. The iFile has already been licensed. It's a deposit insurance system that the central bank wants to build out. And once it is done, it has applications across Africa and across the world. And you know, in the context of the recent bank failures in America, the need for a product which looks at deposit insurance is huge. So we're actually using it to use iFile to create a deposit insurance system. So the value of this to us is basically goes beyond just the South African implementation, but the possibility of creating a product, a deposit insurance product for central banks globally. And so that's really the value. So by next quarter, hopefully, I will give you a very precise answer, a much more precise answer. Actually, I'm not even giving you an answer. So I'll give you an answer which is reasonably precise in terms of what our share of the total thing would be. Secondly, you see, the nature of the contract here with the SARB is while we have won the contract on the basis of certain bids, once the discussion actually started, the scope of the work also started getting expanded to some extent. It's moving in one direction as opposed to another direction, which again leads to a situation where precisely coming up with a number becomes difficult. But let me tell you that it's attractive. And it's, you know fully well that if a typical contract, for example, is about a million and a half in terms of implementation as it is in the case of Bhutan, and this is like a 4-year project, it's relatively evenly spread out, and therefore the numbers will certainly be much, much higher than a single year implementation. I hope I've answered the question to some extent, but as of now, that's the best I can do.
No, this was very, very helpful, and thank you for providing the qualitative color as well. So effectively, a normal implementation like Bhutan is between 1 to 2 million for us, but so that would be including the license fee as well. Here, the total license plus implementation amount would probably be much higher, spread over 4 years. So that is helpful, and the is that right, the conclusion that I drew from your answer?
Yes and no, but it's not that 1 year revenue will be spread over 4 years, but it will be revenues of a similar order every year of 4 years.
Sure. So that was helpful, sir. And I was to follow up on this is if you could give, like what about collect in other are other regulators coming up with new tenders and how is the pipeline looking there?
So there are about 4 or 5 regulators around the world who have actually gone down this path and have started expressing their interest in moving this direction. So the answer is yes, and we have about 4 or 5 proposals that are currently pending and which are being evaluated by different countries. So it's taking its own sweet time. So I think some countries are making up for lost time and trying to move very fast. Some countries are moving at their own snail pace. There is no uniformity in terms of the speed at which they actually move. We are also trying to evangelize and make certain things happen in certain countries by offering creative solutions. But as I said, I think that the good news is the flow of business that used to be there before COVID has now reached the same stage as before COVID. Therefore, if earlier, 3, 4, 5 countries would basically go in the direction before COVID, we are now reaching the stage where we can reasonably say that there will be 3, 4, 5 countries going in the direction post-COVID.
Okay, great. So like we saw, I mean, I'm not saying that we'll win everything, but will we see the 4, 5 countries that you referred to this year? Will we see resolution to these tenders in this financial year? Or do you think it will spill over? Just to see if we will win more collect deals this year. That was a broad question in general.
So we will win more collect deals, and we're also looking at other markets, like in the US, as you know, the whole G2G reporting is moving in this direction where there's a need for a collect product. So there are increasing opportunities across the world, and we are as good, if not better than most of the others who are actually getting into it. The competition that we have, as before, is from a preference that customers have for bespoke solutions. We need to surmount that. Therefore, we're also looking at building up more partnerships to be able to license iFile to people. So we also have developed what I, for want of a better phrase, call it iFile in a box, which we actually airdrop into a country with some and with minimal implementation, get them started. I don't know what, we've not sold a single license of that, but I don't know. So if countries will have a very simple implementation, something like that may actually work. So there are some creative solutions we're actually looking at to be able to get to speed very quickly. I think budget is still a constraint for many countries. I think the COVID has actually left many, many countries broke, and COVID actually caused a lot of financial distress across the world within governments. So I think we have to be flexible in terms of pricing, and that's what we are. So I'm reasonably confident that we will have a strike rate that's no inferior to what we used to have earlier.
Fair enough, sir. That was very helpful. So just want to move to Create, and I mean, I think given what's happened in the last quarter, I just wanted to hear your thoughts on ChatGPT, and if a company can file in XBRL using the ChatGPT that is out there.
So we did a little pilot a few days ago, and I think it offers possibilities. It offers tremendous possibilities, but I think it's too early to basically expect ChatGPT to replace human intervention. I think it's too early to basically expect that everything can be automated. We are still playing with it. So maybe what I will do is I'll get. Is Thomas, are you on the line? Thomas, are you on the line? You can actually take that question, please. Is Thomas there?
Thank you. So should we move on to the next question?
One second, wait. Thomas, are you there? So I don't know if Thomas is there. So we did a little pilot a few days ago, right? And what we actually found is that while it works to about 85-90% of the time, there is a 10% where it does not really work. And when it comes to filing, you can't be 90% accurate, you have to be 100% right. So I think it offers interesting possibilities. It does not mean that self-filing will start. It does not mean that companies won't need products. It just basically means that we have to tweak our products to offer a higher level of automation. I think if we do that, I think it's quite possible that tomorrow people might actually ask for a lower cost. To be well positioned for that, I'm not terribly concerned about it, but it's an uncertain territory where the uncertainty is something that we need to go through. I don't know what the final answer will be. I'm hoping that we're running some pilots here, we're running some experiments within the company, and we also have a team that's working on, what does it basically mean? It means more automation. And so we have people in the company who are playing with it to see what the outcome could actually be. We are confident that the impact that it will have is not on losing a customer, but perhaps on price.
Understood. So I'll get back into the queue, sir. I'll let other people ask questions. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Ravi.
Thank you. Participants, to ask a question, you may press star and one. We'll take the next question from the line of Prashant, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for this call. So I think I had ChatGPT on my mind just like Rohit. So
Prashant, the audio is not clear from your line. Request you if you can use the handset mode, please.
Is it better now?
Please go ahead.
Yeah, so one thing is, what are we doing, of course, what are we doing in terms of pricing, just like an extension of the previous question, to accelerate our, the deals that come through, especially with a lot of change that's happening in the way everything being covered by ChatGPT. It's a mix of both questions that was trying to be getting covered in the previous question. And how we plan to get it. Of course, Collect is doing well. How are we doing to get it, multiply in Collect being everywhere, and with reference to competitors also? If not, you made the statement, you're as good as them, if not better. So, yeah, we're ready to cut down on pricing, but maybe what would be the other edge that we are trying to do to get the deals as quickly as possible? Because I also heard the statement at the beginning that we might get on a different growth trajectory. So what are the strengths that we are trying to leverage on? What are the pluses that might work in our favor? How is this creative solution that, is it all about cloud or, I mean, automation, cloud, innovation are different areas that I want to look. I wanted to see, I'm asking you questions with the intention that IRIS grows big time considering what it has gone through. So some different perspectives that can give the strength to bring to investors to hold on and also think through. I think we are going through different times now, and everywhere we hear tragedy is going to change everything. That's the everyday thought that everybody is getting, I guess. So that's what I wanted to ask.
You know, there were a lot of questions in there, so I'll try to see how which of them I can answer with some reasonable degree of understanding. I think the way we look at the whole thing, and we had an internal assessment, what automation will actually do will not take away the need for a product. What automation will do is that the features of automation, the benefits of automation, have to be incorporated into the product. That's number one. Number two, what automation will do will also compel people to basically go out and create their own filings in a more an increasingly do-it-yourself situation as opposed to a service-oriented thing. Third, what automation will actually do is not to get rid of the domain expert. The domain expert is still very required. And many of these automations depends on some kind of learning algorithms being built in, which may then lead to benefits to the customer in terms of productivity enhancement and so on and so forth, which is why I said much of the automation will lead to a pricing issue going forward. I don't think it will basically mean that people don't need a Carbon. I don't think it means that people will not need any of the other products they're actually using. It will basically mean that every product has to constantly keep abreast of technology, stay ahead of technology, and incorporate the technology that's meaningful in order to be able to deliver a customer experience that meets with the best in the available today. Now, as far as Collect is concerned, which is where we work with regulators, so what does that mean? So this is what the ChatGPT talked about. We are talking about the context of the filer. In the context of the regulator, what we believe in automation will actually do is it has to ultimately lead to productive efficiencies and regulatory efficiencies, oversight efficiencies, as far as the regulator is concerned. Where all will it play out? How will it play out? These are all questions that we need to ask. So when you look at embedding deep AI into regulatory environments, what they should try to do is to basically empower them in the regulator even more so that they can ferret out problems before it happens and try and spot problems in the market before it actually happens. So I think it's inevitable and imperative that every one of us in this space leverage these technologies and incorporate them in our respective products. I don't think the products will basically lose the demand, and I think the products will basically need to be enhanced, and you have to turbocharge these products with these technological advances to be able to stay relevant. I think Balu might want to add something here.
So I just want to add that, you know, my sense is with automation coming in a big way, which I think is around the corner, the adoption across countries also would accelerate significantly. So from a regulator perspective, more and more regulators would start looking at, you know, collecting structured data and through documents where, you know, they can convert the data into the structured format much more easily using a combination of information standards and this kind of, you know, automation tools such as LLM models.
I think what Balu is also saying, Balu, correct me if I'm wrong, we're actually saying at the end of the day that the complexity that often has been found daunting by regulators will actually go away with automation.
And the regulators might feel more comfortable, you know, expanding the mandate across large and small companies. Now they do it in a much more gradual fashion.
So what is the business that we are in? The business that we are in is in basically delivering a solution that creates structured data for consumption by the regulator. So that is still the basic premise. So you use better automation to deliver better structured data, faster structured data, and structured data in more formats than otherwise. That's basically the answer. Thank you, Prashant, for a great question.
Yeah, thanks, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rohit, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
So thank you for the follow-up. I just wanted to continue on to Create. So one observation was that I think the first time in many quarters that you've seen a year-on-year decrease in the Create revenues as far as the end quarter, the 4Q numbers are concerned. So I'm not talking about the annual basis, but this quarter revenues, if I see on a year-on-year basis, the Create numbers have come down. So you did briefly allude to it that the India numbers went down. But so at least in the previous calls, my impression was that with all the things that are happening in the India front, where we have been appointed as one of the IRPs, we are doing e-invoicing, etc. The impression I had was that this is a geography which would grow rapidly in the years ahead. So if you could speak about that a little more, why did India slow down? So what is happening in Create in terms of growth going forward?
I think one of the things that happened, which we actually mentioned even earlier, is the drop in the number of companies, the clients we are servicing in the UK market. There, for example, bulk of the customers, all the customers actually came through one partner, and that partner is increasingly deciding to take those things in-house. And with that happening, I think more and more people are now moving away from the product. So there's been a drop in the number of companies that we're actually servicing in the UK market. That's one very important factor. The second thing I want to mention in the context of the IRP and all that, those revenues, it's just starting. It's just starting off in a small way. And the basic IRP offering itself is free. It's the value-added stuff that you can actually charge for. The generation of the e-invoice has to be provided for free because that's the condition of the license itself. But we can offer value-added stuff, which I think will kick in over a 12, 24, 36-month period. So I would not hold my breath to expect significant growth in terms of revenues on the GST front of the e-invoice. I think it has a significant, the number of GSPs in the country has actually dropped, and that offers interesting possibilities. So there's some churn happening in the market, so that's something will happen. But the e-invoice impact, which will lead to offering of value-added offerings, whether it be in the form of credits and other things, you will see that happening over the next 12, 24, 36 months. Balu will add to what I've just said.
So on the question on the Indian revenues, I would hasten to add that Indian revenues haven't slipped. The absolute increase is there, but the increase is small compared to other geographies. And when you talked about the drop in Create revenues this quarter, I suspect there could be two reasons. One is that in the carbon segment from Europe, there are a few companies this year which could be filing in Q1 instead of Q4 because they're taking the time to do their annual filings. So this is a shift from one quarter to another. And last year we had slightly disproportionate number of companies filing in Q4. Secondly, last year we had some revenues coming from the e-invoice mandate, where there's a one-time component. And e-invoice mandate up to 10 crore was rolled out in March and April. So there were some revenues coming in through that route, which has a one-time nature as well. So these two could have played a role in the margin drop from a quarter-to-quarter point of view in the Create segment.
And there's also a drop in the number of companies filing in South Africa. The number of companies currently mandated to file in South Africa has actually dropped. But we've got a bigger market share. But having said that, the mandate has shrunk to some extent. I think COVID led to some kind of rethink in certain countries in terms of who needs to file and so on and so forth. It's not very, very material. We're so small as a company, it's not very material for us. But that's also been a factor that's led to some kind of rejigging of these things.
Great, that was helpful. So want to understand more on the UK bit. So based out of India, our USP has always been that we provide high quality offering at a very low price, right? So which sounds like a very unbeatable combination. So how is it that a UK player through whom we were getting all these customers, how are they taking it in-house? Because I would have thought it would have been more expensive for them.
So it's obviously not a very low price at which we offer it. And they're able to do it at a much lower price. And they're one of the big four. And I think they also have a center in India, which they probably are using to create the documents. And they probably have spent some time developing a software of their own. It's not rocket science. So it could be multiple factors. So this company, one second, we'll sneeze. So this company initially had multiple vendors. And we've been rationalizing the number of vendors, and they have come down to, I think, two, if I'm not mistaken. Deepta, you want to take that question in terms of the rationalization of the universe of vendors that this company was working with?
Sure. So actually, this came down to just one. You know, for over the years, they had kind of, they had started consolidating. They didn't see this entire, the HMRC, IX, BRL layer being as big as they thought it would be. And, and they had built their own team apart from working with four or five vendors outside. So over the years, they started, over time, they started kind of consolidating, apparently, and the business. So finally, it just landed up with them and us. We were the only ones left. So they are kind of not going to focus too much on this, but since they also have a team based out of India, like Swami said, they wanted to take whatever they was in-house, and therefore they started transitioning from us as well.
And also, Rohit, I want to disabuse you of the notion that we are primarily competing as a low-cost provider. That's not the case.
No. So I'm not saying we are a low-cost provider, but sitting out of India with our cost base, we have the ability to give very high-quality products at a price that will be difficult to match while making enough profit for us. So that's how I think of the offering that our company provides.
A customer of ours already had a captive India, and so they had capacity, let's put it like that, because they weren't looking at business in this area, investing and growing this business in this particular area, and they had capacity built up kind of over the years. So they may have done the math a little bit differently.
Okay, so we use the partnership approach to win customers in Europe and US, right? So do we see, and I believe some sort of a similar risk played out with DFI and who we partnered with in case of the US power industry. So is this partnership approach that we follow, or does it have an inherent risk that the partners could take them in-house?
Go ahead.
Sure. So most cases, no, because in most cases, the partners we have actually don't have the kind of like, they don't have the capability to kind of offer XBRL either as a solution or a service in Europe or in the US. So in most cases, the answer is no. Also, our partner network is also far more diversified. So in the case of the UK, we had one partner, and that partner was kind of like Swami mentioned, one of the big four, who was offering a service who had built up a certain amount of capacity and then was ramping up with a series of, other people like us, basically. So I would say the UK piece is kind of a little bit more of an exception than what we would expect with other partnerships. In the US, I think you referred to Rohit, the kind of the energy sector and, the partners over there. So in that particular case, that was a partner who was a startup who had connects in the energy space, but had kind of aspirations to build a solution also. Most other partners don't have such aspirations to build such solutions at all. And therefore, the partnership broke. We actually landed up transitioning or retaining almost all the customers, bar one. But we don't see this we don't draw an inference therefore across all the partner networks. In fact, it's not there with any of the other partners that we have, and we have a mix of partners across the US and Europe.
Let me add to that one second, Rohit. I think we are constantly living in paranoia about the possibility of losing customers because of these things. It can happen. And, Deepta has her ears closer to the ground than I do, but it's a question that keeps bothering me constantly. I think there are certain kinds of partners who believe that they should take it away and create capacities and do whatever. Then there are partners who don't believe it's worth their while to do it. But I think this is why the entire strategy of ours to keep on pampering partners and staying as close to partners as possible at the end of the day, and being nice to partners, they actually pay off. So it's work for us, but it's inevitable. It's inevitable, and we have to basically keep track of these things. So which is also why we have a blend of a strategy where we, even when we work with partners, we should have some kind of a direct connect with the customer, because the customer is the one who needs to make a decision in terms of which product to use. If the customer is the one making up his mind in terms of which product to use, a partner cannot disrupt that relationship. Which is how, for example, in the case of the energy market in the US, even though our local partner has had an aspiration to venture out on his own because he saw the market being much bigger, the customers, all of them except for about, I think one or two, decided to stay with us because of the visibility of our team to that customer. So I think building that visibility to the customer and say, keeping the hook tight is where the is the approach to take to ensure that the customer stays loyal to you.
Perfect. So now, if you could talk about growth in Create. So we spoke briefly about disclosure management in the past and the ESG mandate and the expansion of the power industry mandate in the US and winning newer customers on the old SEC mandate, which has been existing for a long time from our big competition out there. So could you speak about what are you excited about in terms of scaling up Create over the next 2-3 years?
Deepta, one more question for you.
Sure. So, we're excited about all of them. So, in terms of like the ESG mandate or the, you know, the energy sector phase two mandate, for example, you know, there is an element of timing in the sense of, you know, the mandates have to be officially announced, the date has to be set by the regulator. Of course, there is, you know, all of, there is a lot of like early marketing, preceding kind of engagement to get, you know, to get the name out and even get some early pilots out and, you know, those kinds of things. So there is definitely excitement about that. Over there, however, it's the question of the timing, you know, so when over the next few years or, you know, coming years, which mandate will start kind of rolling out, both in the US and in Europe. With disclosure management also, we are excited, and our disclosure management offering has been rolled out in the market officially at the beginning of this year, and we have already kind of enhanced as is how we always do, you know. So get early customers, get feedback, do agile development, kind of, you know, enhance, build a roadmap, reach it out to a wider audience. The advantage on the disclosure management side this time is we already have an existing customer pool and a partner pool through whom we can reach it out, plus, of course, build new, customer and partner networks, because the disclosure management can actually go beyond mandates. It doesn't have to restrict only to enterprises that need to file in XBRL. It can be anybody. So we're excited about that as well. And the activity for that has also started, in earnest. So in short, we're excited about all and working to make our, to build up our pipe in all of these areas, the XBRL and the disclosure management pipe.
So also, one thing I must add, Rohit, is we already have about, I think, 50, 60 customers for our DM offering. So this whole thing is works on a freemium model, which basically means you offer it to the customer at a throwaway price or even free for a certain period of time, get them hooked onto it, and try and move them to a priced model going forward. And with about 6,200 odd customers that we serve currently, we see that as a catchment area. In fact, a lot of customers come to us for adjacent offerings. You know, for example, there are customers in India who come to us and said, you know what, we're using a product for ROC filing. There are these new requirements on, say, related party transactions. Do you have a module just for that? And there are people who come and said, can you look at some other module for us? So there are adjacent products that people are willing to use. And once you win the trust of a customer with one core offering, the customers are willing to do more. So the whole DM thing will actually work with multiple modules where people can pick and choose whichever module they want to use, depending on what situation they're in. And we see that as a huge possibility going forward. And the initial trial that we're running with about 50, 60 paying customers, not a lot of money, but they're still paying customers, is actually huge in terms of learning for us and trying to deal with different sets of requirements from different sets of people. So, but as you rightly said, you know, DM is going to be a very important thing for us in terms of going forward. And building on the 6,200 customers we have and offering it to them is where our starting point is.
Well, this is very interesting to hear. So on the disclosure management, so this reminds me of the freemium model. I think you did it at ESMA also. Just wanted to get a sense ki, confirm that we got these 50-60 customers in the beginning of this year, and they are at premium model right now, which means the price increase will kick in from next year, and also just to get a sense of how the pricing for disclosure management product would be in comparison to the Iris Carbon that we sell for the ESMA filing.
So Swami, you want me to talk about it?
Okay, sorry. I wanted to hear more about the disclosure management platform. So it is reminiscent of the ESMA offering that we did with Iris Carbon, where we started off the first year free for a lot of the small customers and then started charging them. So in that context, do you think the 50-60 customers we have, the major revenue portion will start from the next year onwards? Is that how it is working? And what is the pricing of the disclosure management software versus the Iris Carbon for ESMA filing? So is it comparable? Is it higher? Is it lower? It would be great to hear that as well.
First of all, price discovery is still some time away. I don't think we have enough points to come up with a reasonable price discovery algorithm to figure out what people would be willing to pay for. So we are in the process of getting those answers. I think we will be wiser over the next 6 months from a lot of people using it. So the model that we're actually looking at following is to basically say you have a basic product for which you pay a certain amount of money, and then for each additional module that you take, you pay a certain extra amount of money, and that's really the model we're actually going to follow. So it will be comparable. It will be comparable, and it will actually lead to increased revenues, because currently Carbon does only one kind of filing for people. But by adding more and more modules, we expect that the revenue per customer will actually go up significantly. So we will charge separately for ESG, separately for ROC, separately for capital markets, separately for something else. So that's the model we're going to follow. And I think it will be comparable, if not better.
Okay, understood. Oh, okay, so this will not be subsumed under the Iris Carbon offering. This will remain a separate offering. Is that right?
So look at Iris Carbon offering as a module of DM.
Okay. Iris Carbon will be a module under DM. Okay, understood.
Which is why the DM is also called Iris Carbon. This is also, DM is also called Iris Carbon only.
Okay, understood, sir. Understood. My last question, could you speak about US in general? On the winning customers from the competition in terms of SEC filings and the muni opportunity, which we have referred to in the last couple of annual reports, the municipal bond, the municipal filing opportunity that seemed exciting in that last 1-2 years.
So as far as the mini bond, the mini opportunity is concerned, Deepta, you take the question. And SEC filing, let me just tell you that we've not even started attacking that market at this point in time. And we need to start attacking that market. As you know, we're still not well-funded enough to be able to attack that market. We don't have the marketing muscle to do that. So we're working on a few creative ideas to figure out how to do that. But as far as the municipal market is concerned, two of my colleagues have been traveling extensively in the U.S. and attending various conferences. And we've already done pilots with about 4 different states. We get invited to all the states, so we are already visible as far as 5-6 states are concerned. We're also working with XBRL US, which is the agency which is promoting this whole offering. There is resistance among various states. Deepa, you want to take it forward and give a more detailed answer?
Sure. So Rohit, on the AXA opportunity or the municipal, the state and government reporting opportunity, we still remain excited. It is, like we mentioned in the past as well, it is going to roll out state by state, and it's also kind of coming under this larger ambit of the Financial Data Transparency Act. So like everything else in the world of mandate, one has to wait for the mandate to officially announce, but there are pilots which happen ahead of time. There is, outreach and marketing, and so as we have already mentioned even in the past, like the US has been using Iris Carbon as the default to when they demonstrate to the various states. Like Swami mentioned, we have just participated in a couple of events in the U.S. right now, it's government, government-related events where, different state governments and municipalities have also come together. So the marketing activity is going on, the outreach is going on early pilots are kind of being done, but much like in the case of the ESG opportunity or in the FERC case too, we're waiting for the official mandates to roll out. That said, we now know how the pattern works. Even before the early mandates roll out, it's important to be there in that market space and start getting the name known and start doing those early pilots and so on and so forth. That's what's happening there. Just to add to what Swami said, both on SEC and on this, the muni market opportunity, the disclosure management module, so if you think of Iris Carbon now as Iris Carbon Disclosure Management and Iris Carbon XBRM, right, and with both of them kind of connected or independent as the case may be. The disclosure management offering is also something that we can sell both in the muni market and, of course, to SEC filers as well. So, once we launch the disclosure management with the flavor for US SEC reporting, we think, that will be an inflection point to going much deeper into the erstwhile US SEC, US SEC XBRL market. Right now, we have been adding customers, but like Swami said, the speed has been slower because it's a market where we need to steal, from other people, for example, and our offering certainly needs to have the disclosure management component specifically for the US market for us to ramp it up. So once that comes into the roadmap and that's available, we think that will give us like a point to jump in further deeper into that into the SEC market as well.
So one more data point I'll give you, Rohit, which is useful in the context of SEC filings, is most companies look at switching vendors only towards the end of the calendar year. When they need to prepare their annual report, their 10-Ks, once they finish the 10-Ks for the year, that's when they start switching vendors. And by looking at the numbers, we look at the numbers in terms of company switching, we actually find about 1,000 companies look for a new vendor every year. So we are actually looking at the churn and saying, which of the churn can we actually bring in? Fighting for a customer to replace an existing vendor is always more difficult than where there's a new mandate. So we have to come up with some creative ways. So we now know which companies are happy to constantly churning vendors and so on and so forth. So we're going to attack them to start with. And that's really how our growth will happen with that market. But it's very heartening from our point of view that there are at least 1,000 vendors who, 1,000 filers who change vendors every year. And the fact that we are ranked very high as a DM provider, in fact, in the chart that you might have seen, otherwise you've seen it, we will have it in the annual report for sure. We talk about WorkyWise ranked number one, we ranked number two. I think being number two in that market is good enough for us to be able to capture a significant portion of the business going forward. And it's like a marathon race where you don't need to be running constantly ahead, but you need to stay with the front runner. And if you stay with the front runner, I think finishing number two is not a bad situation to be in. So we're actually trying to see how we end up in the consideration set of any buyer, who then basically any buyer, when he buys any product at all, will want to see more than one product. And as long as we are in the consideration set, our objective is achieved.
Thank you, sir. And sorry, one last question. If you could speak about the fundraising in general, and that's it from my end.
I don't have any update as far as fundraising is concerned at this point in time. I think while we have not completely abandoned the rights issue idea, because that's only for the board to do that, only the board can decide that. But I think we are in that direction. There are options that we keep discussing, and I don't want to stick my neck out and say what will happen finally. But we obviously need to raise money. And the fact that we are throwing up cash makes it slightly easier. It means that some amount of marketing can actually happen, some amount of brand building can actually happen. But it's something that we need to do. And I know it's almost like a bad joke, the amount of time that we have spent in raising the money, in talking about raising money but not doing it. But it's something that we need to do sooner than later if we want to get onto a much higher growth path. Otherwise, we'll be stuck with this 15-20% growth every year.
Thank you so much. I mean, as always, my job is easier than yours, and I really appreciate the amount of time and detail with which you answer all the questions. Thank you once again, and all the best to all of you.
Thank you, Rohit.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul Bansali from Bansali & Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. I wanted to ask whether the barriers to entry for somebody, wanting to compete with us Has that decreased or can that decrease going forward because of these developments that have happened in artificial intelligence over the last 1 year or so? And whether, you know, some big player like, let's say, a Zoho or someone can just offer our kind of services just for free or something, you know, as one of the products that they give as a package. So is that possible at all, or do you think our services and our software is too indispensable for our customers?
I think it's a great question. But I must tell you that we constantly even paranoia when it comes to competition. We're always looking over our shoulder to see who's coming along. Zoho already has some offering which competes with us in certain areas. I think there is a market for everybody. The market's big enough for everybody, quite literally. Technology by itself will not kick us out. I think what we need to do is to be mindful of how technology could actually affect us. And as I said even earlier, what I think technology will do is to basically change the way we engineer our product. It will also cause a pricing pressure on us. That's where we think it will happen. And I think if we are blind to it, I think we will end up being swept up. We'll end up getting knocked out of the market. But we're not unmindful. We are constantly evaluating what the impact will be. And having people like Thomas available as CTO of the company allows us to do that. So could the big player come and do whatever? You know, very often big players have a certain turf to protect, and when new developments happen, big players try to get into it but don't necessarily always succeed. Zoho is a fantastic company, and Zoho, since the example we actually used, has offerings similar to us in certain areas, and they've had some success, but we've never encountered them in the manner in a manner which would actually scare us. What I think will happen is, at the end of the day, it's quite possible that a big company which might want to get into it may actually make an offer to acquire it at some point in time. If we get successful, I think a big company will actually come and say, you know what, are you up for sale? It hasn't happened, but I would never rule that out.
Understood, sir. That was really helpful. And just one question finally, that, you know, we made this statement that our sales growth could be significantly different from what it has been for the last 2-3 years. So which segments and which geographies are you the most excited, you know, going forward? You know, which parts of your business do you think would this growth come from?
All of them, actually. And also the other thing that's very interesting is our GST business, when seen in conjunction with the compliance filing business of the sort, when you look at them together, I did not think, for example, that a lending opportunity, though we will not become a lender, enabling lending through APIs could actually be something so exciting. So I think every business that we are in is exciting in its own way. You know, sometimes we actually think that when I look at my segments, I say each segment is capable of being a multi-billion dollar segment. It's easy to say that, very difficult to implement it. But I think every segment excites us in ways that are different from each other segment. I think the GST is a huge opportunity, the banking filing is a huge opportunity, and not just Carbon and not just iFile Connect. I think they're all equally great opportunities to get into. So if you meet a colleague of mine who works on one segment, you will think that's the be-all and end-all of the company, and that's the way it should be. So we have very committed people working on each segment, each of whom will tell you that their segment is the one that's going to drive everything going forward. So they're all exciting.
Okay.
My job is to allocate capital. My job is to allocate capital. Balu's job is to allocate capital and resources, and that's exactly what we do, trying to see where to allocate capital and resources to get the maximum bang for the buck.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, to ask a question, you may press star and one. Reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. So we do not have questions in the queue.
So I'll just close by saying that when you look at a company like Iris, don't take a quarter-on-quarter view at this point in time. We're not at that stage yet. Take a yearly view. And I think if you take a yearly view, you will get a much better appreciation for what we're doing as opposed to taking a quarterly view. That's one lesson I certainly want to leave you with. Having said that, we are one very big thing that actually happened the last 1 year is our customer concentration actually come down dramatically. So earlier, we used to have the top customers contributing to a significantly high proportion of revenue, and that's basically because our collect segment was much, much bigger than the create segment. Today, when you take a look at the whole thing, the create segment is much, much bigger, smaller ticket, but larger number of customers. So our customer concentration coming down augurs very, very well for the company. It also ensures that we don't end up, you know, literally, so the law of large numbers will actually work for us. And even if a few customers leave and a few customers come in, I think we are set. That's not a major issue at all. We've also found that the question that Rohit asked earlier, the dependence on partners, we are very, very mindful of that, and which is why building direct hooks for customers is a very important thing, which again is possible if we deliver good customer service, as we actually do. But again, the overarching message, don't look at us on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Look at us for a whole year and look at what we do in the course of the year. And I think what we have done, I think now that we are completely out of our crisis mode, now that we are financially strong, I'm hoping that it will become easier to raise the capital that we actually need to raise to be able to fund a better and get onto a much better growth path than we were on until now. Because, you know, marketing requires deep pockets. All of our competitors have deep pockets. I was loath to raising money earlier because what it would cost to raise money at that point in time. I think there was also much lesser appreciation for our business than it is now. I think more and more people are beginning to appreciate the value of our business. You will hear more about, there are Indian states currently looking at implementing XBRL, which will again lead to a significant visibility for what we actually do. The IRP thing should kick in, I think, the next 12, 24, 36 months, which again will be very, very valuable. So I think all in all, we are confident that we are in a good place. We are actually in a very happy place. And so that's where we are. And I'm grateful to every one of you for being part of this call. I also found out that all of the people who actually came in the IPO, most of them continue to be shareholders. So we owe them a deep debt of gratitude. And we also need to rise up to deliver on the faith that they have in us by holding on to the stock. So we need to deliver on the promise that we made to them at that point in time. So I'm hoping that we don't have a control over the price of the stock, but we have control over our performance. And I think what we will do is control on the performance of the company, which is where we are completely focused between Balu, Rita, and me and Thomas. We also have a few other recruitments happening going forward to strengthen the leadership team in the company. And I'm hoping that with all this stuff happening, we will be able to get the company on a higher growth trajectory going forward. And as and when we get more details about the SARB thing, we will certainly talk about it. And as and when any good news comes out, which has a significant impact on revenues, we will also talk about it. And I'm grateful to each one of you for participating in the call and the question that you actually asked. Rohit always deserves a special thanks. And I'm sorry for the short notice that we had today because of the filing of the results and the conference call, but I have some travel coming up, so we had to finish this off today. So thank you once again, and we'll meet again at the next call, which will happen 6 months later. The reason we don't do a quarterly call is because we believe a six-month call is more appropriate than a quarterly call. So on that note, thank you very much for being part of the call today, and have a fantastic evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of IRIS Business Services Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.